throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kauf with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Jared's back. You know, I was 3 for 4 without you. With recording the show. And there may be a good chance if I forgot to shut it off on Thursday, I went 4 for 4.
So you stopped the recording. 24-hour.
I'm not 100% sure. I know when Scott was here, we got to visiting before the show on Friday, and then I totally forgot about hitting play. But there's always a chance that I never hit stop on Thursday, so we may have two shows in one. But that means when Jared's here, it obviously means that the odds of a podcast go astronomically up versus when he's not here. So we'll find out what he did on his trip down south. SEC Media Days start today. I asked this question to Scott on Friday, and I want to get your thoughts. If you had one question to ask one person at SEC Media Days, what would that be? And who would you ask? Okay? I'll let you think about that throughout the show. Figure out what person would you want to ask what question throughout the entirety of SEC Media Days. I'll tell you what I said. And I think I can remember what Scott said as well. Awesome day last night, or awesome night last night for Elk City, for Western Oklahoma, as Cash Mayfield. We talked about him all baseball season long for the Big Elks, and rightfully so. 115 strikeouts of 143 batters faced, 4 hits all season, 1 earned run all season. He was drafted last night by the San Diego Padres with the 25th overall pick in the first round. He is going to join us here at some point. He may just pop his head in and we'll go right to him. But we'll talk to Cash today, get his thoughts about just the entirety of everything, right? The process, what was it like last night, and all that. So Cash is going to be here in just a little bit, and we'll pick his brain about what's going on there. And then, of course, yeah, we'll hear what Jared's trip was like. 225-9698. Is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about all those things, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple of ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com, or you can download the app. The app's got it all. It's got radio. It's got the Penny News. Brand new edition of the Penny News will be out in midweek. ThePennyNews.com. Big Elk and Paragon TV, we're rolling towards the start of the high school football season. It will be here before you know it. You can watch those games through the app on your phone. And also, of course, the Skinny on Sports podcast, available anywhere and everywhere where podcasts drop. How are you, Jared?
I'm good.
Well, tell us about your trip.
It was fun. Listen, this won't take long because we didn't do a lot. We sat around the pool. We ate a lot of food. We got too much sun and not enough sunblock, and...
So where did you go?
Drank a lot of drinks. Cancun. You know, I butcher the name every time, but it was this new resort that my wife found, along with the travel agent kind of suggested to her, that had been open maybe a year. In fact, it's still new, that the spa was not complete, so there was no spa, like massage or anything like that. But it's like you land in the Cancun. It's like 45-minute car ride further up north along the island, and very nice. And it's called Secret Something, but all inclusive place. So it was. If you don't leave there about 5 pounds heavier, then you're not doing it right, because the food is fantastic. I found this little taco place. So every day at noon, I'd go get these tacos that were great. And for some reason, Allie thought the hot dogs were the best. I'm like, why are we eating American hot dogs in Cancun? But everything's awesome. And nice to get away for a little bit, nice little break, kind of recharge the batteries before, like you said, you know, football season and everything else hits the ground running. So it was nice. We didn't do any excursions or anything. We had planned to go with another couple, but they had a unfortunate passing in the family, and they had to stay back. So it's just me and Allie, and I think if we had gone with the other couple, we would have been more, hey, let's go do this, or let's try this out. Let's go snorkeling, let's do this. But it's just me and Allie. Like, I just want to sit by the pool or sit by the beach. That's all I want to do. And that's what we did. So it was nice.
So when you talk about, like, obviously those all-inclusives, there's multiple different restaurants within the resort. So yeah. What all was there?
Well, there, of course, they had a Mexican restaurant, naturally. And then I mentioned it wasn't really a restaurant. It was like just a spot you can get food that was close to the pool. And it had like this wood fire grill.
Yeah.
That's how they cooked. They cooked pizzas and, like I said, hot dogs. But I only got the tacos. The tacos were fantastic. They had an Italian place. They had a French place. I never had French cuisine, and I never did. We never went in there. It didn't sound appealing to me. They had a hibachi grill, which that's the only place you had to get reservations for. And they said, if you want, you can only get it like the 24 hours in advance. And they told us, if you want reservations, because they had an app, right, that they connected to your room, and they knew you were a guest, said 12:01. Get on the app at 12:01 at night and get you, because it will fill up within 30 minutes. So we did that, and so our last night we went to the Bocce Grill. So I ate all I could, and that was one thing that I learned the last time. It was 5 years ago. We went to a place like this in Jamaica, and I thought, I did not eat enough. And why didn't I? It's all inclusive. And someone had told me, if you're not leaving heavier than when you arrived, you're not doing it right. And that totally made sense. So I was eating a lot. And my favorite meal was at the Italian place. It sounds simple, but it was great. It was mac and cheese with shrimp in it.
Oh, wow.
Had some calamari there. It was really, really good. So I'm had a good time. Did you know they had lobster down there in Mexico?
Well, that's what I was, you know, when you said mac and cheese, I was like, oh, did you have lobster mac and cheese?
No. I mean, like actual lobsters?
No.
No. Well, Allie came home with one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, me, because I didn't apply enough sunscreen like the last day.
How did she get that through customs?
It was... I mean, that's
if ship
I
ship it home,
apply
or?
And reapply and reapply, because you think that you have enough on, you don't.
You're way closer to the equator,
closer to the sun, I guess. Yes, but I mean, I'm not in pain or anything. I'm pretty red. I take off my hat because one day I wore the hat backwards.
Oh no!
And you had the opening right there.
Oh no!
Yeah. I'm leaving that on all day until that's gone.
Oh, no.
Yeah. My kid still laughs at me.
Kids didn't get to go.
This was an adults-only resort.
You know, that's the easiest way for them not to go. Say, oh, sorry, it's adults only.
Yeah.
Sorry, kids.
It feels selfish not taking kids and then feeling good about it when you get there. Like, man, it's just nice. You don't have to say, where are the kids at? Are they entertained, you know, when all you want to do is sit and relax in or by the pool and kids are going, well, I want to do this, I want to do that. Yeah, there's beach access. Yeah. We went down to the beach a couple times, but our pool was the favorite. This infinity pool that kind of overlooked the beach. Mm-hmm. You probably saw some pictures. And that was our favorite because, you know, you get too hot, we get in the water, float. And even while in the water, the waiters would come up to us.
Yeah.
Hey, senor, can I get you any drinks? Can I get you anything?
You sure can.
Yeah. And I joke, say, yeah, give me a margarita, but I'm pacing myself today. Okay, I'll be back in 2 minutes.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite?
Drink?
Yeah.
Maybe the margaritas on the rocks. Allie tried more and more of everything, but I usually stuck with one. Of course, they had Dos Equis in there all over the place.
Oh, sure.
So... But no, it's margaritas is my go-to drink. Just
yeah, I always find one of those.
Margarita.
Like
Listen, you go to Mexico, you get margaritas and tacos, right? That's all I did.
Did they have mango tango?
Probably. I didn't get one.
It was a mixture.
Had a pina colada once.
It was like a mango and...
Bahama Mama.
Yeah. All of those kind of things.
All those mixed up stuff. One time I told the waiter or the bartender, surprise me. And he made something. It was fan. I don't remember what it was.
I think that's how I ended up with a mango tango. God, what is it? It was orange and red. I can't remember what else it was.
A lot of fruity stuff down there. It was really good. They had a swim-up bar, which was during the day the party spot. That's really not our scene. It was in the same pool, but we stayed on the opposite end of the pool.
Right.
You know, a couple times we'd go over there because waiter took too long or something, but nah. But I suggest, I mean, listen, if you can do it, do it. It's a lot of fun just to get away. And
did you have a room key?
A key card.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So when we went, they gave you this bracelet?
Yeah.
See, and it had a key?
Yeah. No bracelets.
Oh, that was so handy.
Yeah, they said this is a no bracelet.
Like, it was like a wood. It was like a, what do you call it? Not string. Anyhow.
Yeah.
I can't think of the word. But it had a little round thing. It was just your key.
Right.
So you didn't have to worry about
leaving it
in the room or bringing down. You really didn't have to take, if we didn't want a bag, you know, didn't even have to take that down there.
No,
just because always had your key around your wrist.
They were like, first thing, it's like, this is a no bracelet resort. You're not going to wear a bracelet all the time. Okay. Whatever. I didn't have that.
Well, wonderful.
Fun times. But I was, you know.
I saw your boy Trey this weekend.
How was that? How's Alva?
Disappointing as always. We never win. It's so crazy. We never, ever win.
We always go during a heat wave.
It's always hot.
Always hot, yeah.
Yeah. If you're a praying type of person, you need to pray for their greens.
They fried?
It's not good. It's not good.
Darn it.
Trey's team played great the first day.
Yeah?
I don't know what they shot yesterday, but they played great the first day. Our team played mediocre the first day. We actually hit the ball great yesterday. We just couldn't make any putts.
Yeah.
And it turned out one putt would have made a difference in a bunch of money. But
don't you hate that feeling?
It's the way it went. But yes, it's everything is really good, but man, they had a little problem with the greens like a week ago, and now they're in dire straits. But Nescatunga was a blast. As always, we just never win. And so, one more year of not getting our picture on the wall, which is the whole goal, getting your picture on the wall. All right, we're going to take a break.
Well, that's Trey's home course. You got to give him – I mean, he knows that like the back of his hand,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So, he better play good there.
They did the first day. Like I said, I don't know what they shot yesterday, but I know they played good the first day. Hanging out here on a Monday morning. Don't forget Saturday, July the 27th. That's just, a week from this coming Saturday. It's the 10th annual KECO Kids Fishing Derby and Presidio Family Day at the park. Fishing Derby starts at 8, lasts till noon. The Family Day at the park with the train rides, the putt-putt, the carousel will go till 1 o'clock. There's a ton of $100 specially marked fish. So if you catch a fish with one of those tags on it, $100 cash right there in your hand, courtesy of, I don't know, a million sponsors. I don't have them all. But it's going to be a fun time. It always is. There's about, anywhere from 700 to 800 of our closest little friends around the pond here at Ackley Park coming up Saturday, July the 27th.
Get there early because, I mean, when it starts, it's shoulder to shoulder, it feels like.
It's around
the ponds.
It never fails. Every single year, you know, there's kids from, I mean, what do you think, 3 or 4? All the way up till you can be 15,
right?
15 and under. There's all ages. And in every single year, there's a kid or two that clearly have fished before, like a bunch.
Yeah.
And they throw their lure in and reel in about 8 other poles, and they just leave. And they're like, you know what? Grandpa's farm pond is so much a better idea than just coming out here to the fishing derby. But everybody's welcome, kids 15 and under. It's a great time. At the KECO Presidio Family Day at the Park and the Fishing Derby, Saturday, July the 27th. All right, joining us now is the newest member of the San Diego Padres organization, the 25th overall pick last night, Mr. Cash Mayfield. Cash, how are you doing?
Good, sir. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. All right, let's start with last night. Just kind of describe the emotions and the feeling as, you know, everybody was out at the golf course, 6 o'clock rolls around, the draft starts. So kind of describe the emotions as everything started rolling.
Yeah, I mean, it was very nerve-wracking, kind of like going into it with kind of like everyone there behind you, seeing all those mock drafts come through, seeing your name kind of like that mid to late first round spot, and just talking to people. I was kind of confident going in that spot. So kind of like early on, I was just kind of hanging out, see who was all getting picked. And as like that mid to late first round started to roll around, I was really looking for a phone call. And I got one, something I really wasn't wanting to hear, but it was still a pretty good deal.
Uh-huh.
And so still kind of wanted to wait for another offer, ended up getting another offer to the Padres, ended up taking it, and all those emotions kind of let out from there.
So you mentioned the mock drafts. I had seen four spots that it felt like were the main ones. Seattle, possibly at 15, was the highest. Mostly linked to the Dodgers at 23, then the Padres at 25, and then I'd heard if you got to Texas, there was no way they weren't going to take you. What was it like when you the Dodgers are picking and you don't see your name up on the screen?
Yeah, so like that was one team I was really looking forward to. I mean, I had a lot of contact with them, and they showed a lot of interest.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really looking for a phone call, never got one. Ended up looking at the TV, it said pick was in. I'm like, oh, crap, okay. So we just had to keep waiting, and then right before the Padres pick, we ended up getting that phone call.
So, you know, everybody thinks about, like, the NFL draft, and, yeah, you, and you see those guys in that room or whatever, and so that literally is how it is at the process here. Like, you knew before it was on the screen that the Padres are going to pick you?
Yeah, so, like, no one else knew. It was me and my parents. Hmm. We were the only ones that knew that I was going to end up getting picked. Had to step outside to take the phone call, came in, try not to let it show on my face to, like, kind of like give it away.
Uh-huh.
But and I turned around, everyone had their phones out, so they probably kind of had an idea of what was about to happen. So
that's what Wyatt said about pick 15 or 20 to 20. Mm-hmm. Everyone would have their screens on the, or their phones on the TV screen, because no one knew. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Because it looked like genuine shock and excitement. Yes. When your name did come up.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, kind of like feeling all those people behind me, hearing them get all crazy right when my name was called. It was awesome to be a part of.
Yeah, it was around pick 20. My wife said, hey, can you start the burgers? I'm like, now? So I went outside, turned my TV outside, and I'm flipping burgers. And pick is in. I'd go and look at the TV, hoping the burgers weren't going to burn. But I caught it. It was pretty cool scene.
Yes, sir.
So what has your process been since the season has been over, kind of keeping yourself, I guess, preparing for the draft?
Yeah, so now, I mean, I'm still just seeing my trainer, still keeping my body and arm in shape. I mean, I'm not wanting to back off and just get weak again, so kind of just like keeping myself in line, kind of like getting ready for the draft, and now I know where I'm going. Now I can just keep doing what I'm doing and then potentially start to develop at the Padres organization.
The MLB draft is so unique because it's not in an offseason. It happens right at All-Star break, right in the middle of the season. And so there is potential you're going to be in the farm system, ready to go, right? How's that work? You just mentioned you go down to Arizona, and then from there, do they say, okay, we're going to send you here? How does that work from there?
Yeah, I mean, so first off, it's like I'll go to rookie ball at their spring training complex. Mm-hmm. So it's like everyone does that. I mean, I'll maybe throw like an inning there. It's straight just like training and like develop it for me and just kind of like getting to know the staff and faculty there. But after that, it's like I'll probably come home for a week, fly back out for 3 to 4 months, and then I probably will come back during the holidays or somewhere in the fall. And then after that, during the spring, then I'll go out to spring training.
There you go.
And then after they see me play there, then they'll kind of figure out where they need to put me in, like what league.
Sweet.
So you're not going to really know if you're low A, high A, double A, whatever that is, until after.
Yeah, that's pretty much all, like after they see me, like how I work and how I develop and how I play during spring training. That's what will kind of figure out where I'm going to go.
Last year, I mean, you were great as a junior. How were you able to develop the velocity and the jump in velocity that you had from your junior to your senior year?
I think just growing into the body I have. I think just junior year, I was probably like 6'3", 180. And then coming into my senior year from the offseason, gaining some weight, kind of growing into that body. Now I'm like 6'4", like 200. So end up gaining a little weight. So I think just all that work I put in, just also just growing into the body I have now, that's where all that velo kind of started to spike.
How much more is out there weight wise that you can carry? And then maybe velocity.
I mean, I've had a few people tell me if I can get up over 200 and hold it, I could potentially be 100 mile an hour arm. So I mean, that's really exciting to hear, and I'm really hoping I can get there. But we'll just have to wait and see.
At what point did you start to realize in your own mind, I can be a first rounder this year?
I mean, so kind of like going into the offseason, had a little trouble getting my name out there. I mean, I thought I was probably going to have to go to college. So kind of like having a goal to work up to that Super 16 Chicago and working up to a great senior season, kind of get my name back out there. And once my name was out there and I had some guys coming to watch me and the way I was performing, I had a pretty good idea that I was going to end up being a early pick at some point.
Hanging out with Catch Mayfield, newly minted member of the San Diego Padres organization. Let's talk about the season. What was it like dealing with that pressure, knowing, and I remember the Chicago thing happening, and then all of a sudden it was like, whoa, people remembered who you were, and now you look up in the stands, and it was craziness. It was like a zoo every single time you pitched. What was it like dealing with that pressure?
Yeah, so like in Chicago at the Super 60, it was a lot of pressure. I mean, it was the first time I've thrown in like in front of several scouts, because it's like I step up on the mound. It's just a bullpen, but I mean, you're having like 150 plus scouts watching you. So, I mean, that was very nerve-wracking. But once I got up there, I just kind of settled in and did my thing. Kind of coming into the season, first game, have scouts out there, but now it's like an actual gameplay. So those nerves started to kind of come back. It's like I have an actual hitter up there now. And kind of like going back to there, it's like once I step up on the mound, kind of just sat in there and just did what I do.
Those scouts were regulars. Did you get to know them personally? I saw a couple guys like, well, they were there at the last game.
Yeah, I mean, well, some of them. I mean, not really, like, personally, sure. But I did get to talk to a lot of them and kind of like get to know them and, like, something about, like, their organization. But, I mean, all of it was pretty cool.
Did you ever let yourself out on the mound, say, Super Regionals? They were everywhere. Did you ever let yourself just kind of look up and take it in and enjoy what was happening?
Well, I mean,
it's kind of hard to in the moment, right?
I mean, it sounds awful. Not really.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was cool seeing that, but it's just like I said, kind of like being up there on the mound, just kind of doing what I do and kind of zoned in. I mean, that's what I was really focused on too.
Yeah, especially had a job to do.
Especially like in that Super Regional when I ended up throwing that perfect game. I mean, I was extremely locked in on what was going on.
Are you sure? I mean, 18 strikeouts, nobody
yes.
reached.
Yes, yes.
All right, your family. When your family's all baseball, right? I mean, mm-hmm. from Rudy, your dad, Matt, and everybody. When was the first time you can remember throwing a pitch?
Oh my gosh. I think the first time I ever pitched, I think I was in like, it was like my first year of kid pitch. I mean, so I don't think I did very good. I mean, I think I was just up there just pitching at that point. But it's like, I knew I wanted to possibly be a pitcher when I got older. And I started to like really take that seriously when I was kind of like coming up through junior high and mm-hmm. stuff. And so ended up like going to play that travel ball and getting some interest about pitching. And that's like where it kind of set in. It's like, I mean, like I want to be a pitcher when I get older.
At what point during that process did you think this could take me somewhere big?
Yeah. I mean, I would think probably like coming into the season. I mean, kind of like here in the past, I mean, it was like college interest and it's like there for a while. I think I was just like, yeah, I mean, I could go to a Division I college and pitch there and that'd be awesome. But kind of coming into the senior year, you have some pro scouts there and you're performing really well and you're getting a lot of talk with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's where it kind of set in. It's like, okay, I could possibly end up getting drafted here.
How much does it help to have the family that you have kind of keep you grounded and keep you kind of focused on what the task was, you know, game to game, you know, between starts and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, you have my dad there. He's been my coach ever since I started even playing baseball. He's the one that kind of got me to fall in love with baseball. You have my mom there who's going to support me every step of the way, like who's never going to back down, believes in everything I'm going to do. You got my little sister.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she supports everything I do, and just the rest of my family. I mean, they kind of believe that I was going to go somewhere.
So out of your mom, your dad, Rudy, and Matt, who was the most nervous last night?
Matt was pretty nervous. I mean, that's
I like, heard he was skipping around chairs.
That's like one of the first times I've ever seen him cry. Oh. And it's like, I knew that like really got to him. But my dad, it's like kind of like getting off that phone call with the Padres and potentially end up getting picked by them, looking at my dad, him starting to tear up. I mean, it just really hit me. It's like this is awesome.
How do you already have a Padres hat?
Yeah,
I think the local store has it here. All teams send you a hat? I mean, I saw that last night throughout the draft. These guys who were not there, they toss them hats, you know, when they're at their homes or wherever. I'm like, how do they already have the hat? So tell me the story about the Padres hat.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, just like kind of coming into the draft, my agency that I have, they actually sent me every single Major League Baseball team's hat in my size. So kind of like going to that draft party, we kind of had all those hats lined up on a table.
Yeah.
And it's like after they picked me, I walked up and grabbed the Padres hat.
That's
So I get to keep this one, but all the other ones get to leave.
Oh, no.
You got to get them back?
Get back to my agency. Yep.
Oh, no.
Yep. I don't get to keep those.
See, you ought to be able to keep a hat for everybody.
Yeah.
No. I mean, it was all my size. Like, I had some of my cousins be like, hey, bro, can you give me a hat? And they're like, it's not going to fit you, dude. Like, you got a way bigger head than me.
We're hanging out with Cash Mayfield, first-round pick yesterday of the San Diego Party. Speaking of your cousins, I heard some of the stuff you've been doing since the season's over is playing wiffle ball or hitting rocks into the creek and that kind of thing with Miller and Harrison. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like when I go out and hang out with them, Harrison's probably doing whatever. He'll come and join us or something. But Miller's always out there to be like, hey, bro, you can go play wiffle ball or something? I'm like, yeah, sure, I guess. So we'll go out there and we'll play for hours. I mean, we always have a lot of fun. We always like to kind of hang out with each other and do that. So that's what Miller said. He's like, yeah, all that stuff paid off. I'm like, I don't think that's where it's from, but okay.
I love it. The little cousin's like, you know what? Great job, your first round pick, because I threw wiffle balls at you.
It's like, I was hitting at that time. I'm selected as a pitcher, but thanks, man.
Honestly, though, you know, it's all the different videos in kids that age, your Wyatt and Curry and all those guys. How cool is it for you to kind of set that example and be that person to look up to as they start to grow into junior high and then to high school ball?
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think just like me being little and seeing some of those high school guys in UConn kind of growing up, some of those role models I had, and kind of like some of those, we had a few big league guys that kind of rolled through because some of the assistant coaches at UConn used to coach some of those big league guys. So I would always get to like meet them, and they're always great role models for me. So kind of coming into Elk City, kind of a smaller town in Western Oklahoma, no one really knows about it until they end up coming here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, just being a role model for some of these younger guys, just having someone to kind of look up to, especially having those scouts come out here to Elk City, they know where Elk City is, and they ended up seeing my high school team play. So that could, I mean, so it's like they know where some of these guys are now.
Yeah, that's something we had talked about during broadcasts or even in between innings, is the exposure, obviously, that you had and the spotlight you had on yourself, but also exactly that, who everybody else gets seen as well, and how that could start kind of that trickle effect down and through because they know where we're at.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know, in exposing the city, there's a lot of people who drive through this town, you know, and before broadcast, the scouts would show up, they get set up. We had to get there super early to get a good seat because those guys always like to be in the middle like we do, but we would hear them talk, and of course they know each other, and they would say, hey, where are you going? And they're like, how far of a drive was it here? I was this far. Nice city, yeah. And I'm just kind of soaking that in. It's like, yeah, we know this is a great city and a great area. I think that was really cool what you brought. You kind of opened their eyes to this region that it's not just a flyover state. There's some good baseball out here.
Yeah, it's like I had a lot of those scouts ask me, it's just like, dude, I've never even heard of Elk City. It's like, well, yeah, well, now you do.
Yeah.
So it's like,
so what's the timeline for you, you know, now until maybe, you know, how long will it be till you make your way to Arizona, and then what's your training regimen going to be like between now and then?
I mean, so I talked to my advisor. He said probably like a couple days from now. So I've been texting him asking, and it's like, okay, like when's like my travel schedule? Like when am I probably going to end up rolling out? He said it'll probably be like a few days. Just kind of like take some time with your family, kind of soak it in, and we'll let you know. But I'd say probably like the next like 3 or 4 days, I'll probably end up heading out to San Diego to kind of do some of the training stuff there and then actually sign the contract and stay out there for a little bit, like around that team and around that organization, just kind of like get the feel for it. And then I'll go to Arizona and start like that training and development process.
Okay. So and then you come back for like a month or so of that, come back, and then you're out there for 2 or 3 months.
So it's like I'll be out there for a month with the first time.
Uh-huh.
And that's like when like that rookie ball is, and it's like I'll be developing, maybe throw an inning in like a game, and then I'll come home for about a week, kind of like do like my training stuff here, like as I've been doing, and then I'll go back out for like 3 to 4 months, And then that's like just straight training, I'm pretty sure. And then I'll come back like for the holidays.
So you're literally going to throw maybe an inning until you roll into maybe spring training games.
Yeah, pretty much.
Next spring.
Yeah.
Wow, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, they told me, they're like, dude, they're going to treat you like a baby. I'm like, okay, sounds good.
Have they told you anything specifically yet that they're thinking about wanting you to work on?
Well, I mean, I've talked to them. I even told them, it's like some of my off speeds. It's like I had a lot of people say they were really good. In my opinion, I think they were just average, because they were like some of my two off speeds I started throwing were literally just start throwing them this year. Mm-hmm. So it's like I did have a lot of scouts be like, yeah, it's kind of below average. It's like, well, yeah, it's a brand new pitch to me. But it's like, yeah, I mean, as I do come into an organization, those are two things I really want to develop on that could potentially get me to the pros pretty quickly.
If someone asked you what's your best pitch, what would you tell them?
Fastball. I mean, yeah, because I end up getting a lot of velo, have a lot of confidence in it, especially with like some of that ride and run I have on already, some of that spin rate I have on it. I mean, that was a huge pitch for me.
What would be number two?
Probably my slider. I mean, that was like one of the brand new pitches I started throwing. Yeah. There for a little bit, it was kind of hard to throw, but I mean, it was something to kind of get used to, and I really started to enjoy throwing it. And that was a huge like out pitch for me.
What was the idea behind changing, you know, from like a curveball to a slider?
Yeah, I mean, so freshman all the way up through junior year, I threw a curveball, which I called it.
Mm-hmm.
Freshman year is more like a 12-6 curveball, had like that downward loopy movement to it. And then sophomore, junior year, I didn't feel like I changed anything. Started to kind of turn into more of like a sweeper type pitch. And I kind of had some trouble with the velo on it. I think I was hanging around like low, mid-70s with it. Went out to my trainer. I was like, hey, like, let's kind of figure something else out here. He changed it to strictly a slider. So now it's going to have some sort of kind of the same movement, but now it's going to be a little quicker with kind of like a more like a sharp break on it. And I really enjoy the slider a lot better than a curveball.
So as you get, you know, 100, if you get to 100 with a fastball, what are you wanting, you know, the slider and the changeup as far as velocity to be?
So, I mean, if I'm, let's say I'm like upper 90s, low 100 or something, I would want the changeup to possibly be like upper 80s, low 90s, and then the slider to be like mid upper 80s. So, I mean, that's where I'm really kind of looking forward to right there.
Man, it's awesome.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
So cool. So cool. Those videos, and I know your parents are more than proud of you. And
yes, sir.
I know everybody here is proud of you. And the darndest thing is you just can't get out of that brown.
No. Yeah, it's like I heard someone say like, you look great in brown. I'm like, yep, there you go. There it is.
Cash Mayfield, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck to you. We'll obviously be following you. It's just it's a really cool thing for a kid from Western Oklahoma.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Don't be a stranger.
I'm not.
Appreciate Cash, man. Taking some time out to be able to come in and talk to us after what happened last night. Really cool. You know, getting texts on the text line or on my phone about, you know, people saying I don't really even know him, but it's like amazing how much pride you have for the town and for Elk City baseball.
Yeah.
You know, for him to do that, to be able to be that successful. It is. It's very, very, very cool.
Yes.
All right, Rother Brothers. I went by Rother Brothers last night, Jared.
You did?
Yeah, about 10:45.
What?
Coming home from Alva.
Oh.
I went right by Rother Brothers, right there on Highway 183 north of Clinton. Rother Brothers, family-owned dealership, started by...
I don't think they were open, so...
They were not open.
For those listening, they're not open.
They were not open. And I'll tell you, it's... I mean, we say north of Clinton, but, boy, it's really not very far south of Arapahoe.
No.
If you're really being honest. I mean,
you're talking about 4 miles here, so...
Felt like it's closer to Arapahoe than Clinton. But Rother Brothers, family-owned dealership, started by its three owners in Kingfisher in 1976, remains family-owned and operated to this day. Expanded out to three locations in Clinton, Fairview, and Kingfisher, Rother Brothers prides itself on creating a one-stop shop with all sorts of equipment, parts, repair services for many makes and models. Excellent service, huge selection, exceptional support for the customers is a cornerstone of the business at Rother Brothers. Also, the Boomtown Grill. If you weren't at the watch party last night, the Boomtown Grill would have been a pretty cool spot to have the MLB channel on and wait for Cash's name to be called. 2103 South Main right here in Elk City. It's open 7 days a week, 11 to 10 on Sunday through Thursday, 11 to 11 Friday and Saturday. Boomtown Grill, 12 big screen TVs, happy hour 2 to 6 on Monday through Friday. They've got everything. literally any type of food you can think of. They've got it from steak to chicken to pizza to pasta, burgers, wraps, salads, sandwiches, everything at the Boomtown Grill. All right, so I opened up the show asking you for Big 12 Media Days. If you could have one question to ask one person that will be in attendance at Big 12 Media Days, who would you ask what?
I would ask, I'm going to mispronounce his name, the new Alabama head coach, DeBoer.
Kalen DeBoer.
I'd ask him, what are you telling recruits? How are you, well, I'm trying to phrase it better. How are you selling Alabama to recruits now that Saban is out of the picture, more or less? Because we've always said, we don't want to be the guy that follows the guy. He's that guy. So how, and if you've listened long enough, I'm still a believer in Alabama. I think the program is bigger than the coach. But so what are you telling these guys, these recruits, on trying to keep them sold on Alabama now that Saban is not the head coach? I think you'd get a pretty good answer out of that one. Maybe not a good answer, an intriguing one, an interested one. So that's mine. Not very flashy question, not very fun, but I think it's one of the bigger storylines going into the SEC media days. Is this is the guy that's replacing, if not the a legend, if not the greatest college football coach of all time. So how is he continuing to keep players interested in coming to Alabama?
Yeah, I think that is probably the second leading storyline in
sure.
the conference.
Well, yeah, the first one is obviously OU Texas
joining the league and right. how they integrate themselves. But after that, I think that's a good one. I went, when I asked this question to Scott, he was going to ask Sark something. I can't remember what it was. Maybe how do you sustain what you did from last year? Mine was put Jim's truth serum in Josh Heupel and ask him how he really feels about coming back to Norman for the first SEC game in Oklahoma football history. I don't know if you saw this last week, but Bob Stoops, middle of the week last week, kind of made a plea out to the Sooner fans of welcoming Josh Heupel back with a hero's welcome. Which, if I'm Josh Heupel, I'm probably thinking, that's pretty rich there, Bob, since you fired me. But I understand, you know, what Bob's doing, obviously, because of what Heupel meant as a player and as a coach to Oklahoma football. But mm-hmm. I would love to know what he really thinks. And if that feeling that he had at one point of disdain or whatever you want to call it, if that's softened now that he's the head coach at Tennessee and appears to be turning that thing around to maybe back toward the Phil Fulmer type times as opposed to what's been happening in Tennessee over the last decade or so. But I think there's a lot of questions to ask a lot of people. Who would, is there a certain person or player that you think would be the most enjoyable to talk to down there?
Stutzman, maybe. He already seemed like this brash SEC character before he's even in the SEC. So I think he's going to have a heyday down there talking to the media and answering those questions, especially the media from the Southeast, from the Atlanta market, the Alabama, Tuscaloosa market, Florida and all that. He's a dude. I just want to stand there and watch him answer these questions because I think he's going to relish it. I think he's going to love it.
Yeah, I just got a text. Scott wanted to ask Sark, is he playing their best quarterback?
That's a great question.
That's what he wanted to ask.
How do you keep Manning happy?
He seems fine.
He seems very, very happy with
very
the path
okay.
that he's on.
I think that's part of that. It's just that family. in the way they are.
Yeah, they're very, yeah. It really helps that he's coming from a pedigree of Mannings that have been through all this.
But the
they're probably telling him.
But the thing about it is none of them have.
Well, that's true, too.
Because, you know, Peyton ended up playing as a freshman. Obviously, Eli was handed the reins as soon as he committed and played. And so it's a different path, but I do think that that family pedigree helps keep him grounded. Does it bother you that he has a better rating than Jackson Arnold in the football game?
It bothers me is I don't have the game yet. That's what bothered me. No, it
For me, the dude that I would love to sit down and talk to at the out of everybody, and it's not even particularly close, is Lane Kiffin.
That's a great one, yes.
I love Lane Kiffin. The more he's become comfortable. I mean, like, think about Lane Kiffin and in the career that he – the places that he has been. He was the head coach at Tennessee, USC – and the Raiders, like at 30 something years old, right? And then he gets humbled and has to go basically the confidence. Think about the difference in the confidence of Lane Kiffin right now versus just a few short years ago when he was essentially Nick Saban's whipping boy as the offensive coordinator. And I think he would probably give a ton of credit to Saban as far as taking him in and believing in him more than anything, because it sure seemed like that was sort of the point where Saban relented to what college football was becoming. You know, the difference in Saban and the offensive stuff from that night in the Sugar Bowl, when it almost looked Jimbo Fisher-esque, the antiquated offense, when you put that beside Trevor Knight and the Sooners run-and-gun attack. And you look at Kiffin then versus Kiffin now. I mean, heck, he got to the point where he didn't mind taking shots at the King. King Saban.
Yeah.
And it was great. You know, We really got jobbed in a lot of ways that we didn't get to experience Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach in Mississippi together for a long enough time.
I know. The characters that they are, that the Egg Bowl should have been, you're right. We should kind of get some more of that. You know, Lane Kiffin, will he be there? You know, unfortunately, his dad passed away.
Oh, that's right. I saw that this weekend. By the way, what a crazy... you see Saturday, the two people that passed away?
I saw Richard Simmons passed away, which is kind of overshadowed by the biggest news this decade on Saturday. But
you mean Dr. Ruth dying?
Oh no, I didn't see that.
Dr. Ruth and Richard Simmons died the same day.
Wow. Talk about pop culture icons.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yep. I didn't see that on Saturday. No.
And then Shannon Doherty?
Yeah.
Were you 90210? That was
watch that. Nah, it was a little, I was a kid. It was a little too teenager and older for me. I didn't get it.
Yeah, I never really did either. I never got into the 90210 thing. It was about when I was probably in getting to be junior high-ish. A little bit before, like late elementary through junior high, maybe. It was never really a thing for me.
Nah.
More Charmed than anything with her. Mm. I didn't really watch that, but it just would be on when you'd wake up in the mornings in syndication.
It seemed like TNT had it on a loop.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you mentioned what a wild Saturday afternoon. You're still in Mexico when this happened? Or are you on the way back?
I was in the air with my phone off. So imagine the noise on the plane when you land, and they, you know, they say you can turn on your, you can take your phones out of airplane mode, all that stuff. And it was bzz, bzz, ding, 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 and it just kind of murmurs in the, while we're waiting to deboard. And I'm, and then first text I got was, I can't believe that happened. How is he not dead? I'm like, what are you talking about?
Right.
And I said, I just landed. You got to fill me in. You got to catch me up. And they sent me a link, and I caught up quickly. That was insane. And I'll say this. We were inches, if not centimeters, away from Civil War II starting.
Yeah. I'm afraid you're probably right. I really am. I'm afraid you're 100% right. That could have been the straw that broke the camel's back. There's so many. Here's the problem with any of this stuff anymore is, you know, I'm already seeing videos. I mean, social media, anybody that's not just completely mortified, people have videos of them immediately saying, you know, that they're in on it, or, you know, look at that signal because they moved their hand, whatever. None of that.
Stop with that.
None of that matters. It's just what happened was awful. Absolutely awful. And it's funny to me that one side talks about how the other one is violent and says, but one side is the one doing all the violence. And for it was absolutely sickening to me on Saturday evening. You know, the coverage is nonstop, wall to wall on all the major networks.
Right.
And it's absolutely sickening to me to watch those phony media jerks who incited every bit of this by calling him Hitler for the last 8 years. Look at what's happened. 2017, a crazy loon on the left shoots up a baseball field and damn near kills Steve Scalise. A crazy left-wing idiot has an assassination attempt, didn't quite get there, on Kavanaugh. And then this. And don't give me this crap if he's a registered Republican. He's donating to left-wing causes. And for those, the media, the mainstream media people, to incite every freaking bit of this and then act like, oh, we've got to cool the temperature. Shut it. Absolutely shut it. It's all your fault. And listen, I promise you in their heart of hearts, they're sad that he missed. And that's what makes it sickening.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't take long for certain media outlets to already start blaming Republicans and Trump himself. I saw one example of that, which infuriated me. Now, in a weird way, I kind of hope this all kind of tempers everything and just kind of calms everybody down, because I mean it was very sombering, like holy moly, like that guy, we almost witnessed this guy's a bullet go through this guy's head on live TV.
Yeah, and people immediately saying it was staged. You know, it wasn't staged. A dad jumping on his kids and taking a bullet to the head and dying, protecting his children, that wasn't staged. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, you're right. I mean, millimeters, absolute millimeters away from seeing a former president's head get blown off on live TV. And there's lots of questions that remain to be asked as far as how in the world that person, any person, just could walk. Get to that vantage point, the most obvious spot for something like that to happen.
Yeah, there's a lot going to come to light. There's like an investigation into that. People will, I think, get punished for this, for dropping the ball on that. And we're going to know a lot within the next few days of the shooter.
No, we won't.
Of his mindset.
No, we won't.
You don't think we'll know?
No.
They won't tell us anything?
No. I've got a theory as to why, but I don't necessarily need to tell you that. But it'll be, this person will be carefully crafted to fit some sort of narrative. And I guarantee it's already started on scrubbing of social media accounts, doctoring them up. It's just the way this happens. It is. Just the way it happens. Every single time. And then you're wondering who is behind the curtain in Emerald City pulling all the strings, right? Like the Wizard. The Wizard of Oz. Who is behind the curtain? But anyhow, thank goodness, you know, I don't think it's too far to say that him not being dead had some divine intervention. Oh, moving his head at the right time, just the right time. You see that picture that you can see the bullet whizzing by him? Have you seen that photo yet?
Yeah.
The still photo? I mean, unbelievable. But I don't think there's any doubt. It was not his time. So, anyhow, SEC Media Days coming up today. Do you know the sky? I knew the schedule last week of who was going to be when. I know Sooners tomorrow.
Oh, I just had that pulled up. Today, LSU, South Carolina, Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
So, I bet Lane Kiffin's there. And Vanderbilt. And then tomorrow, pretty interesting slate.
Tomorrow's the best day.
Georgia, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Missouri. Wednesday is Alabama, Mississippi State, Florida, and then Texas. And the last day, Thursday, Arkansas, A&M, Auburn, and Kentucky.
Boy, it feels like it's a three-day event with that smorgasbord of crap in the last day.
Arkansas, A&M, Auburn. Yeah.
I just saw this. You know who the quarterback at Mississippi State is?
Mississippi? No. Who? Wait.
He's going.
Don't tell me. Oh, Blake Shapen.
Remember him? Baylor.
Yeah.
I had no idea. That's, you know, it's like anything.
He must hand off jet sweeps pretty good.
I heard the morning guys joking about that.
I did too.
Well, he's
former Baylor quarterback, and I'm sure former Baylor coach will get season tickets there.
It's not our deal anymore.
Not our problem.
Yeah. I did see Sankey already has had kind of his state of the conference address, asked about Clemson and Florida State. He goes, we're 16 now. We're kind of basically saying, we're at 16. We're good. Now, that probably means here in about a day and a half, they'll announce Florida State, Miami, and Clemson, and somebody else coming to the SEC. I did see last week during Big 12 media days, mm-hmm, that there was a lot of smoke about maybe a few of those schools going to the Big 12. The Florida State, Miami, Clemson, and there was one more. It wasn't North Carolina. It was somebody different. Maybe NC. I can't remember. Georgia Tech, maybe? Anyway. Brett Yormark might have even mentioned that as just name dropping. Our focus is on our 16 members as Sankey today. Ask about further realignment. Our focus is on our 16 members. I'm certainly not going to fuel speculation on what happens next. Which would lead you to believe that there may be something that's going to happen next.
Nothing would surprise me.
Yeah, I would think honestly, I would think that the SEC and the Big Ten specifically would want to wait to see what happens with the playoff. Meaning how the committee decides to select the teams, is strength of schedule really put into play, is being a member of one of those two conferences a big help to getting at-large bids, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then deciding what from there would be my guess. Basically, if you don't have to do anything, why would you? Then you're just splitting up the pie in more pieces. There was reports last week that, and this probably has to do with the playoff as well, but that everybody in the league is going to be in favor of 9 league games instead of 8.
I think that's for the best.
Yeah, I don't know if they'd even really have a choice, honestly, because at some point TV is going to start making some decisions, if you don't say they already aren't.
I was going to say, aren't they already making the decisions?
But with the amount of money that's being paid to the conferences from the TV, they're not going to put up with East Popcorn State. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They're going to want to see, and if it's a conference game, fine. Or if you're going to have to beef up your non-conference schedule, fine. And I think, honestly, I don't think schools or conferences will have that big a problem with it if the committee actually rewards that scheduling, that type of scheduling. Mm. You know, if just use Texas for instance. Their conference schedule isn't one of the more difficult ones in the SEC, but they are going to Michigan, the defending national champ,
yeah,
out of conference in week 2. And so, you know, if Texas is rewarded with an at-large bid, even if they lose that game, say they go 10-2, which, you know, one loss in the SEC probably puts them in the conference title game, really, or at least right there in maybe a tie. So maybe they almost have to be 9-3. But Oklahoma, 9-3 against that schedule with the road games that they have. If the teams are as good as people think they are preseason, now that, you know, that could shift.
Right.
But if they really do have, you know, 6 of the top 8 in the SEC on their schedule and only play 2 at home and 4 away, or away from Norman, one obviously the Texas game. And you can get through that thing 9-3, you have a fantastic argument to be in the 12-team playoff. Now, will it be rewarded as such? And if it is, then I think you could start seeing some really fun matchups, some really good games with a 9-game conference slate, and then being able to pick one of your other 3. I mean, there is zero sense in Maine coming to Norman in November.
No.
There's no sense in that. That needs to be a conference week. And then you can play, if you're, you know, if it's not just about what's in that right-hand column, meaning losses, if there's actually some nuance to it. And I heard Barry Trammell say this morning, only twice in the 4-team playoff history did they kind of ranked teams out of order, just going right down the loss column. And it was the first year when Florida State was undefeated, but was the 3 seed, even as the defending national champ. And then it was last year when Florida State was undefeated and didn't even make it. So I think that's really going to matter. Or I hope it really matters. Say that. I hope it really matters. That way we end up getting some really fantastic one more conference game and hopefully some really good non-conference games. And of course that's also believing that the current setup is going to last more than just a couple of years, and it's not going to all be thrown out of whack again with realignment. I actually have a feeling for the better part of the next decade it's going to be fairly stagnant.
You think? For a decade?
Waiting on the 12-team playoff thing, the TV contracts or that, whatever long they are. The ACC, the grant of rights, last until like 35 or something like that. and it'd be hard for those teams to get out of that, you know, without, and they're just, you can't afford to give up that much money by getting mad and taking your ball and trying to go to another conference. And I think the Big Ten and the SEC want to see what it looks like. Give it a couple of years and see what happens. Now, if they don't like it, then I'll be wrong and they'll change it. But I think that everything's settled down just for a little bit. You know, about halfway through this TV deal with the 12-team playoff, maybe it changes. But I think at least for now, it's going to be kind of see what we got and then decide what changes are coming for the next time. But I could be wrong. All right. It's a good Monday. Wild Plum Jam. I don't have any information about it.
Yeah, this Saturday, gates open at 5, music starts at 7. Great Divide, Tyler Wilhelm and Caroline Grace. Go to the KUCO Facebook page for a link to purchase tickets.
There you go.
Kids 12 and under are free. It's the family friendly event.
Absolutely.
At Sayre City Park.
Sayre City Park, it's always been a great
thing. Saturday's weather looks perfect.
Yes, it does. Nice and cool.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.